gets closer to Jerusalem. On this Ash Wednesday, we join with Jesus as he with determination, he looks towards what must happen. He's been telling the disciples, well, these are the things that are going to happen. They've been kind of ignoring him, sort of pushing it aside, hoping that he's really just kind of like, you know, speaking in hyperbole, really, no. But here is Jesus in the process of setting his face, great phrase, right there in our scriptures. He set his face on Jerusalem. His gaze, his intention, his direction is set towards what he needs to do. Now, there is a long journey to get there, for sure. And in Luke, we see for the next 15 chapters, and for us, the next 7 weeks, we see these steps that occur and stories that happen along the way. Stories that teach, parables that he tells, events that happen like this one, that point in a particular direction that defined Jesus' final chapter in ministry. And so tonight, as Jesus sets his face towards Jerusalem, we see him heading into an area that oftentimes would have been kind of worked around. You know how a few years ago people decided, we don't want all this traffic going downtown, let's build a bypass, right? Let's build a beltway so that we can kind of like move people around. It'll be quicker that way. It'll be easier that way, right? Yeah. Well, kind of. There's a beltway for sure around these neighborhoods because they are places of conflict where Jews and folks who were once part of that that body but now have entered into other religious relationships, there's conflict, and it's hard. And sometimes people work really hard to kind of, let's not go through there. It'll take longer, but we don't want the hassle. Jesus has no time. Although 15 chapters is a lot of time, he still has something to do. And so he goes, and he sends word ahead saying, hey, I'm coming to town. I want you to know that I'll be there soon. And things happen. People get excited about what they hear. And there are powerful conversions that seem to be occurring. So much so that as Jesus is working his way through, people are running up to him. Lord, I will follow you. I'll follow you anywhere. And to the first one, Jesus says, you need to know there's no housing plan that comes with this. You know, foxes have a den to rest in. We're making this up. We're working from the perspective of not necessarily having all the things worked out and prepared. I like it when things are prepared, when I can go into a town and find a nice place that has my reservation and credit card number. I like that. It's good to set up the VRBO before you go into town. There's nothing like this. And Jesus calls him out and says, look, I don't have time to find you housing. Another one comes up, says, look, I am hoping that I will be able to say goodbye to my father, to my relative, to my household. Multiple times, people are coming up to Jesus and saying, I want to follow you. And you hear him over and over again saying, I don't know if you're fully understanding what needs to be done. Your intentions seem to be very good, but I need to go and go in a particular way and take action. I need commitment. This seems harsh, but he is in an urgency. This seems to be one of those moments where even though reasonable requests are being asked, we have no time for that. We have no time for the distractions that are coming in the midst of trying to do this. I need disciples who are willing to tough it out, to be hopeful, and to follow me for real. Not part-time disciples, not ones that are like, hey, let's just see how this goes. Hey, this makes sense. This seems comfortable. I like this. I like you, of course. And as harsh as it is, Jesus says, I don't think so. There is no time for this. There is no energy to pull away from the job to be done. Jesus has an intention that needs action, and he plans to live it out. So tonight, as we are working our way through, beginning to work our way through these journeys, we'll notice that there's a theme of intention and action. In fact, as we work our way through these next few weeks, we will see that there are kind of polar opposites, or what would seem like that. It's this or that. It's I want to do this versus I'm doing this. But the truth is that much of life and much of our discipleship lies in between. That's why we call this series Everything in Between, because it's not just a simple matter of going this or that, black or white. You know the categories that surround us all the time. We have arguments that occur. People line up behind those. We find, well, you're either this or you're that. Or maybe you're that, but don't be this. Over these next few weeks, I really want to invite you to journey with Jesus and perhaps finding a middle way. So first, let me talk about this whole business of intentions, because Jesus seems to be calling those things out for sure. You know, I want to do this, but I need to do that. You know how that goes. Sometimes we will say to someone that we care for, I'm going to do this, and then it kind of falls off the table or it slips your mind. I'm going to take care of that thing that you've asked me to do, darling, 400 times. Maybe you don't have that conversation in your house, but we certainly do in mine. I once began the process of teaching my daughter how to mow the grass. This is one of my daughters. I won't name the particular culprit in this, but I was teaching her to mow the grass. And the cardinal rule in our house when we were mowing the grass is that you always pick up the newspaper before you mow the grass. Before you get there and have that machine pushing through the grass, there will be, first of all, do you remember newspapers? Large piece of paper, words on it, beautiful sentences inside it, pictures sometimes. It was just a lovely experience. I really miss the newspaper a lot, but I don't, I don't miss trying to figure out what to do with them when I haven't read a stack of them, you know. So I said, please, darling, would you make sure that you pick up the newspaper before you mow the grass? And so my son ran inside with a picture in his hand with his phone saying, look what your daughter did, you know. And there in the picture across the entire yard are little bits and pieces of my newspaper. So I came to her and I said, darling, I say that when I'm not necessarily thrilled. I said, darling, didn't I ask you to pick that up? And what did she say? You know what she said. It was, I meant to. Okay. It's okay. I will. So there she stood with the best intention on her heart. I was going to do that. You told me to do that. And inside of my life, I knew that I was going to do that. But when it came to doing it, what did she do? She ran right over that with the lawnmower. And did it again the next week. I was going to do that. Now, sometimes we get to the business of, I was going to do that with the idea that you get credit for that, or you get partial credit for that, right?
She's daddy's daughter, though,
right? Well, she certainly is, but she didn't get partial credit for that because that was the job of getting the rake, right, and having to, you know, kind of clean that up. There are intentions that we have in our life that we mean to, that we say, this is a good thing, that I need to tend to these things over here. Of course, there are emergencies in our life. Of course, there are things that we really have to put our focus on. But goodness gracious, how many times have we said, I'll get to that? When I retire, I'll get to that. When I am free, when we have the house built, when we, you know, have the bills paid off, when I have all those things that I need to get done, you know, when I get my doctorate, sorry, that was a little too close. I'm in the same boat. We're, you know, you're ahead of me. I'm jealous. That was jealousy coming out. So intentions, although they may be wonderful, are just that. And if they do not match action, they're wishes. Kind of a hope. Hope to get to that. I hope to get to the taxes, right? Now, then, so on one side, there's the business of intention. But then on the other side, we have the hopeful outcome, which would be action. If you match intention with action, there's where it is. If you take that notion of, I'm going to do that, I'm going to clean the coffee maker where it says descale for the last 6 months, right? I'm going to clean up that space that is causing me so much chaos. I'm going to address that health concern that I've been ignoring and my family has been really worried about. And doing it. So on the one end is intention, the other end is action. Now, action's beautiful. I like action. A little less talk. The country song, there's a country song. Many of you know exactly what I'm getting ready to say. You're going to say it back to me. A little less talk.
A lot more action.
Right. Isn't that great? That's so great. Now, the problem with a lot more action is that sometimes we act without intentionality. Right? We get to thinking like, all right, well, okay, let's just do something. Throw the spaghetti on the wall. See what sticks, right? By the way, I've done that. Don't do that. That's not good. That's another thing to clean up. When you have this business of acting without intention, that's impulse. Let me just kind of shoot from the hip. Let me just kind of give you what it seems like would be a good idea, and sometimes it might work, and sometimes it might fall really flat. Or sometimes we deal with the consequences of the impulse. I really wish I hadn't have done that. Oh, that was not a good idea. I really wish I hadn't. Or the other one with action is, let's do it the way we did it before. Right, let's just, you know, we did it like this last year. And Mama did it like that 15 years before that. And then, you know, there were people long before me that were in this rut. It seems like a nice rut. Let's just stay in the rut. Let's pick up the next drink. That seems to make things go away for a while. Let's self-medicate in this particular way. Let's actually try to borrow some more time if we can. And, you know, we'll figure out the intention later. So these two binaries, independent of themselves, not helpful. With Jesus, as he has set his face towards Jerusalem, towards what he has to do to change everything. What Jesus does in Jerusalem on the cross changes everything. What he has to do, he has to do and cannot be sidetracked. And what he wants from his followers is the same thing. We have a job to do. I love this picture. I think I can make that happen. This is from the art that is associated with our series. A group of artists and preachers and beautiful thinkers helped kind of put this together. We are drawn in part from that. This is by Lauren Wright Pittman. It's called Towards Jerusalem. The figure that you see in the middle is Jesus. Where is he pointed? He's on the road, right? And there are people in front of him, like look at him like, we're not sure about this, and want to give him turbulence. And there are people behind him that are tapping him on the shoulder. Hey, let us come along. This sounds fun. This will be good. I just got to, like, if you could, like, stop over to Bucky's for a little while. I need some, you know, I need a big gulp. I need, you know, something. By the way, that's not to trivialize the kind of things that were put in front of them. Those things were heavy and big. And he's still saying, we have to keep on the road. So there he is, on the road, with his eyes towards Jerusalem. There is a need for intentions now. Intentions is really part of what we begin with in our business on Ash Wednesday. Because in just a few moments, I'm going to remind you, and it's hard, I'm going to remind you of your mortality and how short this time is that we have. And we think we have all the time in the world. And the time that we have, what are we going to do with it? How do we take what is given to us, the direction that our Lord asks us to follow in, and do what is needed? in the devotional guide. By the way, I really hope that if you haven't seen the devotion guide, we have a few more of these left in the common area. These are well worth the $2-3 that we're asking. We're just paying for the printing. There are copies that will be available electronically as well. If you're comfortable with that, that's awesome. Let's do that. But there are paper copies as well. There's remarkable art and reflections and music. There's music and there's really fine poetry. The poem for today, the poem that we need to remember in this in-between of intention and action, is called Both Please. And let me read this for you. Because it's one thing to speak of love. It's another to hold a newborn in your arms, to sing someone to sleep, to lean down and listen for their breathing. It is one thing to speak of faith. It's another to press your forehead to the floor, to cry out in prayer, to ask the hard questions and still thank God for the meal. It is one thing to speak of the divine, to speak of God. It is another to walk under a tunnel of wisteria, to stand barefoot at the edge of the sea, to hear the birds sing as the sun returns and whispers, thank you, thank you, thank you. It's one thing and another. So I pray, give me both, please. Show me both, please. Show me your intentions, God, and put my feet to moving. So somewhere between good and unrealized intentions that we know we have, and impulsive, repetitive action, somewhere between the two lies discipleship, lies the path that Jesus is asking us to follow him on, to be tough, to take the steps. And so, as Lent begins, let's ask ourselves the questions about our readiness to do that very thing, to do the steps in the middle. Are we willing to be transformed? Are we ready? Are we open to what might happen in the midst of that? Are we ready to go even if we're not fully ready or have a good reason to stay? Are we ready to let those things go as hard as they may be? Are we ready, even with some really good reasons, to wait a little longer to begin? Oh, I'll get there. I can't do that now. Will our actions reflect our best intentions? Are the intentions that God has inspired inside of us? Are any of our actions misaligned with our intentions? Is what we're doing really what we want to do, what we hope to do? Are there any actions toward kingdom building? Kingdom building on earth, as is in heaven, right? That we've avoided, that you're avoiding now. As we ask these questions, what practices or rituals or broad, crazy, amazing ideas, what are you willing to commit to as we enter into this season now? There are a few things that are often invited in this season. During Lent, people are invited to abstain from things, setting something aside not just as a sacrifice, but as a way to quiet our souls and draw near to God. People are invited during Lent to give, whether through time or resources or acts of kindness. We are trying our best to do 150 of those as we get ready for our celebration in the fall. But right now is a perfect time during Lent to find ways to take what we have and put it to good use, to let generosity shape our Lenten journey. Also, this season asks us to reflect, to remember that life is fleeting, and to let this awareness deepen our gratitude and our faith. And this is a perfect season to pray, whether through simple breath prayers or deeper moments of connection, maybe a new practice, maybe something that you haven't done in a long time and need to come home to. To find prayer to be like an anchor in the storms that we find ourselves in. So as we begin this time, as we enter into this season, may God bless our next steps. May we find ourselves following the one in purple all the way to the end and to the beginning. And I say all this to you, brothers and sisters, in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Amen.